Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jump and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole.
Hello!
Chris Casso.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hey!
And today, we are honored to be joined by Stefano Gaudiano! We are coming to you live from West of London in beautiful downtown Fremont. And before we get started, let's just briefly introduce Stefano. Well, briefly, it's the whole thing. That's why we're here. So, Stefano, you are an inker.
Yes.
Yes, and... And books like Manifest Destiny and what was the first one I heard? Boomshot, Bloodshot?
Bloodshot of Wartown. Gotham Central was my first job.
As Excellent.
A specialized thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Daredevil, Captain America, Spider-Man, a bunch of stuff. It's been great.
All right. And yeah. And we all know about another title that you work on, The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
So tell us. I've never actually spoken to a professional inker before. How did you get started in that?
I got started as an inker when I realized that there was such a thing as an inker in comics. Growing up in Italy, I loved comics, but I didn't understand exactly how they were made until American comics were imported, and Marvel Comics in particular actually spelled out who did what on the comic book and understood, wow, okay, this is a team of writers and artists and inkers. And at first, I didn't know what it was, but as it happened, I had an aptitude for it because... Inking is essentially tracing someone else's pencil drawings in ink. And the profession was created because when comics started, the printing technology was such that you couldn't have a reproduction of pencils. But they had developed a system so that instead of doing wood engravings or whatever the heck they did, they could print a clear ink line. So, you know, some artists inked their own drawings, but for production purposes, a lot of books actually were produced by teams that included a penciler and an inker. I was very good at tracing. I was really good at it. So I just decided, wow, you know, I want to focus on that. And I learned how to pencil. I learned to do other things. But in the end, I found that that is both what I'm best at and in some ways what makes me happiest. So
that's great.
Yeah, that's how my secret origin, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, You told a story earlier about how you traced somebody's art on paper and showed it to a sibling. And I remember doing that when I was a kid and trying to pass it off as my own artwork. If only I'd known there was a career path there.
You need to lie, yeah.
All right. So you work on The Walking Dead, which is primarily a black and white title. Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference between inking a black and white versus a color comic?
I much prefer inking a black and white title because every once in a while the colors will amaze you and just surprise you in wonderful ways. And I've worked with incredible colorists. I think, earlier we showed a slide of Moose Bauman's work, and there's a lot of colorists. I mean, there's Betty Breitweiser, Matt Hollingsworth, you know, since there's a comics panel, the people that are watching probably know who I'm talking about, that just absolutely have turned the comic book into something incredibly better than what it was before the color was on there. But I grew up mostly on black and white comic books in Italy, and overall, I just find that black and white art is more appealing, and also as an artist, it's closer to my vision, you know. I like having the last word as an inker. Now, on The Walking Dead, actually, I don't get the last word because there's an incredible artist who has been working on The Walking Dead since before I came on board, doing gray tones over the inked art. It's, I was going to say Owen Jenny, no, but that's a colorist on Manifest Destiny. Sorry, Cliff Rathburn. Incredible artist in his own right, and he just does the tones. So he gets the last word, but I'm pretty close. And because it's gray tones, more of the feeling of the black and white art comes across, and it's just aesthetically pleasing to me, and it's a very smart choice, I think, for The Walking Dead. It's possibly the only American comic book that is as successful as it is, that is in black and white. This is a real rarity for American comic books, but it was a very smart choice, presumably from Robert Kirkman and maybe the editor, Eric Stevenson, to go with black and white because it suits a story so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It keeps a mood, and it also cuts down a little bit on something that I personally found was a bit of a problem with a television series, which is the gore can be a bit much.
Oh, yes.
And if it had not been a black and white comic book, all the blood, all of the decaying flesh and everything might have been more overwhelming. And I think black and white art is just easier to assimilate, essentially. Yeah. So I think it's fantastic for a Walking Dead, and it's my personal preference in any cases for black and white art.
Cool. So. One more question for me, and then I'm going to open up questions to the panelists if they want to ask you anything. Who is your favorite artist to ink?
Oh, to ink. I can't limit it to one because I hate to sound mushy or even inappropriate, but...
oh, it's okay to sound inappropriate. Okay.
You're among friends here.
We're in Seattle. I can go with this. Okay. It's just, the relationship between an artist and an inker is a very intimate thing. And, you know, I'm here to serve my artist.
All right. Cool.
And I love it. And every experience is different. And even when I've worked with artists whose work I don't love, the experience of working together is always a joy.
Yeah.
So then your question, it's like, okay, are there favorite artists? And honestly, every working relationship, and stop me as I start rambling on too long, but every working relationship has a very particular character that enhances my learning experience as an artist and as a producer. So for example, with Charlie, I guess it was earlier, we were looking at some of Charlie's art. Charlie's art is more precise than any other artist that I've ever worked with. And Charlie forced me to really approach his line work from a completely different perspective. Normally, when I ink an artist, I see the pencils as something like a roughly finished wall that needs to be painted. So you need to put a coat over it to finish it, okay? So then I apply inks as a final layer on the art. With Charlie's art, it took me a few issues to realize that what I needed to do was completely the opposite process. I needed to strip away all of the what we call the construction lines, essentially, the underdrawing in Charlie's art, and zero in on the, you know, looking at the prints of the JPEGs that he sends me, zero in on the precise line that Charlie wants.
Yeah, because...
it was more chiseling, basically, away the excess and just reducing it to the absolute line that Charlie wants. And that's the first time that I worked with an artist that required that of me. And, you know, I've been asked by other inkers, is it tedious? Because I know my style is generally much more expressive. I usually use a brush instead of a pen, and I tend to put more of myself into it. And it's not tedious. It ended up being an incredible experience. So I love working with Charlie, and the more I work with someone, the more I understand about their process and admire them increasingly. You know, it just comic books are designed to be read quickly. So, you know, as a reader, there's some artists that will stop your attention, but that almost goes against the purpose of what a comic book artist does. And Charlie's an absolute master at keeping the story moving, keeping people reading. But because I ink his work, I get to spend more time with it than anybody else.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's been fantastic.
Excellent.
Conversely, then I work with, you know, I'm going to start with my first collaborator that I worked on the storyboards with, Rick Hoberg, who's a local artist. You know, you should invite him on the show sometime.
No, I should.
Yeah, he worked on the Rick Hoberg worked on all kinds of comic books and cartoons throughout the 80s, 90s. He's working on Transformers now. He's worked for Halo. He's done all kinds of stuff. And inking him was an incredible education because Rick is a master of storytelling, and I learned a lot from him. Then Michael Lark taught me about drawing as design instead of figure drawing. And, you know, I grew up learning how to draw from this kind of classical Italian Renaissance idea of, okay, you need to learn anatomy, you need to do this, and you need to do that. And Michael Lark, whom I worked with on Gotham Central and later Daredevil and other projects, he didn't draw. He took photographs. But then instead of doing what some other artists do, which is do this kind of like almost pornographic renderings of photographs that are just all surface and no substance, Michael used the photographs to create designs and compositions, and he would not be concerned about the things that I like to draw, like the folds of the clothes. He just did shapes and how they work together and storytelling, and I just learned so much from Michael. And what I got to do with Michael was I added an expressiveness in the line work, but I understood something about what art is that, again, I wouldn't have had from anybody else. Lee Weeks is an incredible artist. Luis La Rosa, there's just this incredible fantastic draftsman and the creative and, you know, the expressions and that were just almost a more physical experience of like, this is so much fun to pretend that I've actually drawn this and finish it, you know? And then there's someone like Butch Guicy, I think is how you pronounce his name, who is like the thing that blew my mind about Butch is it's very hard to read Butch's pencils because it's all like little X's and lines, and you have to figure out, does he want it to be filled in black, or is that actually supposed to be an X? Or, you know, just, I don't understand it. And I'm looking at it, and I'm trying to understand it, and as I get into it, you know, once you know, you start getting, I started seeing that Butch was doing something in some ways, I mean, I don't know what's going on in Butch's head, but I know that it looks beautiful when it's finished, right? And the thing that I think I saw in his work is that he went almost a step further than Michael. Michael takes photographs. Butch, it seems to me, actually takes old comics. And they may not be things that are in front of him, but I recognize the images. Like, they might have been imprinted in his brain from reading the same comic books that I read growing up. Yeah. So I would see these figures that I've seen before, but the way he places them on the comic page, he just distorts them slightly and just does this thing that graphically is incredibly effective, but also for me, plays with the whole dimensionality of the reading experience in that it makes you realize on a subliminal level that you're looking at something that is not, you're looking out the window and there's something going on outside of you. You're looking at flat images because of the way he distorts them. So, you know, how do you choose when you have these incredible people? Trevor Herson at Valiant Comics, you know, my editor at Marvel and Valiant is Warren Simons, and he has got such a great eye for art. Mm-hmm. Kerry Nord, mm-hmm. Trevor Herson, you know, Luis La Rosa I mentioned earlier, and I'm forgetting whoever else he's got, but it's just
there's an impressive
plethora of fantastic artists that he's put me in touch with. You know, it's just I can't ask for more. I mean, and that's another advantage of inking, because it's a faster thing to do than drawing. Mm-hmm. I get to metaphorically play music with a lot more musicians doing a lot of different things. So that's another thing that I've loved about being an inker instead of a penciler, where you just do the one book a month, basically, you know.
It sounds like you have incredible job satisfaction, which I think a lot of us here are kind of envious of. Does anybody have questions?
Is there,
or have we covered everything?
you had a great list of names there that I didn't realize you worked with. Luis La Rosa?
Oh, my God.
He's relatively new. I mean, not too new.
Well, no, Luis has been around a while. Now, this is like the weird thing about comics. It's just like, you know, we come and go. But Luis was working at Marvel around the same time that I started at Marvel.
Okay.
And he did some issues of The Punisher. He, you know, had a few things going on. And then, because he's a slow artist, he's one of those guys that's very meticulous and puts himself into everything that he does to an excess, almost. He wasn't able, essentially, to make a living, I think, producing at the pace that he was producing. So he actually went into teaching for a number of years. Mm. And then Warren Simons pulled him out of retirement, you know, just mafia style. It's like, okay, made him an offer that Lewis couldn't refuse, you know. I worked a little bit with Lewis on a Iron Fist short story, which was just a pleasure for both of us because we were in sync. It was like, you know, he was happy with the inks. I loved the pencils. And then around the time he retired, but then when he came back to work at Valiant, he was inking his own work. He made an agreement with Warren, but he was doing his own work. But every once in a while, he comes really close to missing deadlines. And then I got to get called in and ink a page here, a page there. So I still, you know, get to collaborate with Lewis very sporadically. And it's always a pleasure. Yeah.
So with black and white comics, and it's like specifically with The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. it's not necessarily about the zombies in that story. It's more about the human drama.
Oh my God,
and the black and white really gives to that because it's taking away from focusing on the guts and more on the humans. In Manifest Destiny, it's kind of about the monsters, right?
Yeah,
and horrible death.
And horrible death.
Yeah. Yeah.
And white imperialism.
And criminals that will never go home again. Yeah,
and white imperialism.
And white imperialism.
And white imperialism.
But also the humanity of white imperialism. This is important.
Putting a face on imperialism.
Let's be okay with ourselves. You know?
I'm glad
you mentioned Manifest Destiny, because first of all, Matt Roberts is another amazing artist who was working in the 90s and then went to the military for 20 years and then came out of the military. And Roberts like, hey, want to draw this? You know, because he's excellent. And he's been great to work with. And also Owen Jenny, that's a book that is a colored book. And the colors are a bigger part of that book than almost any other book that I can think of. Owen basically really adds a layer of volume when he does the colors. He just goes into it so deeply. And so it, as an inker, you know, it's like, hey, that doesn't look like my work anymore, but it looks amazing. It's just, you know, that's, it's another experience of, you know, playing with a group of artists and seeing the whole becoming much bigger than the parts. And the story, I think, is great. It's just that's a book that obviously hasn't had the success yet, but
we keep pushing it.
It's a great book. Yes. Yeah.
And inking can really make or break something if it's like heavy on the dark contrast versus pulling back and letting the color
shine.
Subtle.
I mean, like, that's an interesting book because the inking there needs to be, it's one of the books where the inking needs to be like, lettering traditionally is. Lettering is sort of the craft of comics that needs to be most invisible unless you have a special effect, sound effect, or titling or whatever. And on Manifest Destiny, it's probably the book that I've worked on where the inking really has to take a step back and just simplify Matt's art and let Owen go crazy on the colors. And what's interesting is that even in that situation, it does make a difference who's tracing it. And I'm not actually the one that's doing the work right now. Tony Akins is responsible for inks on that book now. And he's, again, it's like with me and Lewis, Tony and Matt see things in the same way. And it's important on a lot of levels to have that sort of synergy, whatever you call it, because not only the public, whether they realize it or not, are getting a slightly better product, you know, than if it was traced by someone who thinks differently than the penciler. But also the penciler is happy. And if the penciler is not happy, you know, then, you know, it's just that's a problem for the editor. And, you know, so you know, it's one of those things. It's just that we need to work together as a team. And that doesn't happen, I would say it doesn't even happen on the majority of the books. It's a minority of books where the editor is either capable or fortunate enough to put together not only a top-notch team, but a team that works well together. That's very important,
Well, Stefano, we could talk to you all night, but we gotta keep moving. Does anybody else have anything to say?
I had one more question for Stefano. When you are interacting with your peers, your fellow inkers, mayhap those who, how do you respond to those folks who take offense at the term tracer? Because they do.
I haven't had that conversation. I always joke about it, you know, every chance I get, because I do feel the way I felt when I was a child. Uh-huh. And essentially, you know, the story was my brother kind of belittled me for tracing instead of drawing. But my feeling was, I'm an excellent tracer. Mm-hmm. I'm not a mediocre tracer. I think that tracing is an underrated, misunderstood, but very noble craft, you know. I almost said art, but that would be too presumptuous. It's not an art, but it is a craft that is worthy of respect. And so if I talk, you know, when it comes up, which is not very often with fellow inkers, I think that I try to stress how we shouldn't disown this aspect of the craft, but rather claim it. Say, okay, we are tracing, but try to get someone who doesn't know what they're doing to trace the same drawing you're tracing. And believe me, the penciler is not going to be happy. And then, you know, just the whole house topples down. So we're holding things together.
Got it.
You know, pride.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you know, I guess, once again, Kevin Smith taught me bad things with his movies.
Hey, so, you know, it's okay. Yeah. He's all right.
Yeah. More rats.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, that's a great conversation. We got to wrap it up. But at the end of every show, we have a segment called Quiz Time where we give out prizes. Or we don't give out prizes. We give out prizes to you guys. Cole, get the prizes. And let's have the house lights up and let's have the Quiz Time music. So what happened was I asked Cole what topic he wanted the Quiz Time questions to be, and he said supervillains. And I think the events of the past couple of weeks have kind of messed with him, but I think his logic is wrong. Because supervillains are usually intelligent. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you three questions about wannabe bumbling supervillains. All right, incompetent villains. And Chris, give us a brief rundown of the kind of prizes we have to give away.
So we've got some Funko Pop Star Wars figures, and we have some package comics, and we've got the Faith miniseries, which has Seattle-based covers. She visits the Fremont Troll and the Space Needle. We have the Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, which is the full set, and yes, we love Valiant, and Valiant loves us.
All right, so get ready, get those hands ready. Question number one. Marvel's The Matador is a disgraced former bullfighter from Spain. He gains the upper hand on those he fights by using his cape to obstruct their vision. That's all well and good. However, he is frequently matched against this superhero. I saw the hand way in the back. Yes, sir. Give it to Mr. Ray Mizra. All right. Thank you for playing, Ray. Number two, this comedic villain first made his appearance in Batman, the animated series, and like Harley Quinn before him, made the jump into the comics soon after. His gimmick is that he loads some sort of gun or guns with ketchup, mustard, Tabasco, and vinegar in an attempt to possibly cause anaphylactic shock in his victims. Who is this well-seasoned DC villain? I see a hand right there. Yeah, the Condiment King. I never even heard of that guy. Alrighty. And finally, this animated bumbling supervillain has been arching Dr. Venture and family since their college days. Flying around in a giant cocoon with his henchmen and partner Dr. Girlfriend, this Adult Swim character can never seem to catch a break. I see a hand right there. Yes, sir. And of course, my favorite part about that show, after the Monarch and Dr. Girlfriend got married, she changed her name to Dr. Mrs. the Monarch, which is just great. All right, that's our show. I want to thank Nicole Lamb, Chris Casso, Cole Hornaday, all of you, and especially Mr. Stefano Gaudiano. Thank you very much, and we will see you next week.